Howdy, members. Matt McNeil here. Another special interview for you. Tom Hartman, of course, you hear him every day on AM 950, the author of the Hidden History series, The Hidden History of the War on Voting, The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America, and The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment. You can find all those at Next Chapter Books over in St. Paul. Tom Hartman, kind enough to join us today to talk about his thoughts about what has happened in Minneapolis since last Monday and the death of George Floyd. Tom, thank you very much. Your insight is going to be greatly appreciated here.
Oh, it's nice to be here with you, Matt.
Your thoughts, I mean, at what point, it's hard from our perspective to know at what point this became such a national story. Obviously, we knew there was reports out that the police had killed a man on 38th in Chicago, South Minneapolis, Monday night. But very early on Tuesday morning, it became clear that the story that the police had put out was nothing about what exactly had happened. And of course, we started having protests that evening. From your perspective, when did you start hearing about what was going on in Minneapolis?
I'd have to go back and look at which day it was, but it was shortly after the video was posted and started going viral. I'm sorry, I don't do time well, but a month from now and a week from now seem the same to me, frankly. But it was right after that, and it was another story. I think one of the things that this brings up, and I think that there's a lesson in this, independent of the situation around George Floyd in Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Police Department, there's a couple of issues. The first is that something I didn't know until yesterday, that police unions around the country are not almost all of them are not actually unions. They're not governed by labor law. Which is why they call them typically benevolent associations, or they have some other name. And they're basically protection rackets that they run, to protect the cops or to threaten politicians. In New York, David Sirota, in his TMI newsletter today, just published a list of all the donations from the police associations around New York State to Cuomo and other elected Democrats. I mean, they're huge to the Republicans, too. But every time they would come up and say, hey, let's reform the police, suddenly the police would give $1 million to Cuomo, and all of a sudden that was the end of that. Mm-hmm. So, there's that racket going on. And the other is, Joe Stalin years ago said a million people dead is a statistic. One person dead is a tragedy. And I think the fact that we were able to actually watch George Floyd be murdered in a way that was so clear and so obvious, with a cop who, putting his hand in his pocket. It's like, oh, this is just what we do all the time. It's just casual stuff. No big deal. We'll just kill another guy. And it turns out he's actually, I believe, been involved in the murder of several people, or the deaths of several people.
Yeah, step in here, let me share with you. Derek Chauvin, this is all the stuff. In 20 years on the job, he shot and wounded a suspect, involved in a fatal shooting of another, was named in a police brutality lawsuit, and had been the subject of at least 17 misconduct complaints, none of which interfered with his career. I mean, as you talk about the police unions and the racket, dear Lord, I mean, can you tell me another occupation where you can have that kind of track record and still have a job?
Yeah. And I think that the I can't think of another profession where that's the case. And frankly, for that matter, in the United States, I can't think of any other other profession where you've got a group that's running a protection racket on your behalf. The AMA arguably was like that up until maybe 20 years ago, but only about half the doctors in the United States now are members, and their power has slipped dramatically. But these so-called police unions are I think, frankly, they are one of the very biggest problems that we're facing all across the country, regardless of region and regardless of situation. This is just wrong. And people say, oh, we've got to educate the cops better. Well, they've done the studies now. You can throw millions of dollars into educating police, and they still kill people and beat the crap out of people because they've got this so-called union backing them up. And you say, well, we've got to hire people who've got a little higher level of education. Well, you know, there are people out there who are college graduates who are also bullies and thugs and want to be a cop and have the legal right to beat people up. So, you know, what we have to do is remove from them the legal protections that they have so that, you know, much like with a doctor, if a doctor screws you up, you can sue that doctor. Mm-hmm. And that doctor has to carry a form of liability insurance. It's called malpractice insurance. For that matter, if you or I say something on the air that's just, you know, that causes some real bad problem, you know, that causes somebody to be killed or something, we can be sued. I don't know about you, but I carry errors and omissions insurance. To the best of my knowledge, everybody in the media does. And if you don't, your station does, I guarantee you. And so why would cops not have to do that? Well, the cops don't have to do that, A, because they've got their union, or their so-called union, and B, because in 1982, the Supreme Court gave them immunity. It's called qualified immunity. And so, you know, we need to address those two issues. I think until those two things are corrected, you're not going to see anything else change in this country. And by the way, those are two things that are unique to the United States. Cops in Europe don't have qualified immunity. And they don't have police associations that have the kind of power they do here in the United States.
One of the things that you brought up there, and I think that this also plays into it definitively, is that the police unions have played a Republican Party who has been more than willing to get along, you know, as long as they can have cops in their campaign literature, cop endorsements, stuff like this. They have written, in Minnesota at least, they've written laws which you can murder – a police officer can murder someone in Minnesota, and as long as they say, I was scared, it's very difficult to hold them accountable. And that's – it's going to be interesting to see how that's played out in the George Floyd case. But as well, it's also a protection racket because you have the conservatives who basically any time anyone says, wow, that was some police brutality, then they say you're anti-cop. And the unions have played this as well. I mean, they know that the Republicans want to help them. They'll give them money. But on the same side, on the opposite side, they vilify any Democrat when they talk about budget restraints or budget cuts or not fulfilling wish lists when it comes to budget negotiations. And at the end of the day, you know, they've been able to manipulate the system as it exists politically to get the maximum return for those unions.
Well, and Matt, back in the 80s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, when the experience of white people was of the experience that white people had of black people was watching criminals, black criminals being portrayed in TV dramas, and watching black buffoons being portrayed on TV dramas. And that was it. You know, most white people don't interact with black people unless it's, you know, getting on the bus and saying hi to the bus driver. But basically, that was it. And so as long as white people generally were afraid of black people or thought, you know, they're more likely to be criminal, you know, be careful, lock your doors, they walk by the car, all that kind of stuff, which was the norm for white people in the United States, you know, right up until I'd say the last decade. As long as that was the case, then it was a politically potent thing to say to white voters, this particular politician doesn't like the police and therefore doesn't want you protected from these black people who are going to come and get you and, you know, rape your wife and stick a gun in your face and burn down your house or whatever, you know. But I think that in the last decade, what has happened, and part of it is that America is in the process of becoming a majority-minority country, although large parts of the country, that's certainly not the case, but generally speaking. But I think that what has happened in the last decade or so is that a certain critical mass of white people have come to the realization that black people are human just like they are. Black people feel pain just like they do. Black people have, you know, hope and dream and love and mourn just like they do. And they just have a different, you know, color skin and perhaps some different, you know, facial features. But that doesn't diminish their humanity at all. And so that old, you know, Richard Nixon trope of law and order that Trump is using right now, which worked so well in the 60s and 70s and 80s, Reagan did it also, as I'm sure you know, that doesn't work anymore, or it doesn't work as well anymore. And so Trump is out here tweeting law and order. I mean, literally twice now in the last 2 days, he's tweeted just law and order! And, you know, expecting that white people around the country are going to go, oh, yes, sir. Oh, boy, we're afraid of all those scary black people. We need, you know, more cops. We need, et cetera. And, you know, maybe he's getting a positive response in rural Nebraska. But most of the country isn't rural Nebraska anymore. And I think the times have changed, and the Republican Party and some parts of the Democratic Party, you know, we've got to look at ourselves, too. Have not changed with them.
The other issue here that we're getting exposed is the militarization of our police departments. And, you know, I was Army. I'm U.S. Army. I'm a veteran. And when I served, trust me when I say this, you go through the rules, they talk very specific rules about when you can fire a weapon, how you fire a weapon, respecting the whole Constitution. I almost wish the police departments were run like the military, because even today, the director of the Army came on out and said, if we're going to be sending troops out there, I'm going to remind them you're supposed to uphold all the Constitution, including the right to protest and the right to gather. And if you don't allow that to happen, then we're violating our rules. If the police, when you start giving unfettered guns, tanks, weaponry, body armor, all this stuff to the police, I don't think it's a real big surprise that you end up having a kind of a jughead militarized police force that just doesn't understand what they've got, doesn't understand the lethality of what they've got, nor the image that it portrays. It's just tough guys being tough guys. And I think that that is a huge problem.
I think there's two pieces to this. I wrote an op-ed about this that was published on Alternet and a few other places a day or two ago. And the opening sentence was something like, when you give people power without responsibility or liability, the outcome is almost always bad. And so between the so-called police unions and the 1982 immunity that we've already discussed, you've got cops who feel like there's going to be very little consequence to anything they do. But then on top of that, I have three younger brothers, and when I go back to Michigan, we go down to Mason. There's a biggest shooting range in Michigan, and you know, we rent guns and do competitive target shooting. And one of my brothers has a target shooting range in his backyard. He lives way up in rural, you know, central Michigan. And, it's an open carry area. And one time, we went into this small town, one of my brothers and I, with guns on our hip, because we were going to go out shooting, and that was just what we did. And I noticed as I was walking around that I was feeling like, hey, don't mess with me, buddy. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's like, it changes your brain. And I don't know if you had that experience. I haven't been in the military, but I don't know if you had that experience of being in uniform and being armed. But at a really below the consciousness level, it alters how you think of people around you when you know that what you have in your hand literally gives you the power of life and death over every other person in your vicinity. Mm-hmm. That's an experience that most of us very rarely have or never have. And for a cop, that's a day-to-day experience, that power of life and death. And to get back to the liability thing, the only two professions that we have in the United States where we literally put our lives in the hands of other people are doctors and cops, or the medical profession more broadly. I mean, some nurses and things. And in the medical profession, you know, we've got very clear rules about liability and insurance and everything else, but with police, we don't. So, mm-hmm. Again, we shouldn't be surprised by this.
Do you know what the difference between the Army and police are? Is that when I went through my training, I mean, you're in the military, you meet people who have been shot. You see, of course, you are very much embraced in this history of the military, the D-Day invasion, the Korean War, Vietnam War. You talk about the Revolutionary War. I mean, there's a history there where you understand the sacrifice. I have never been a fan of the Confederacy because I'm a U.S. Army veteran, and I know that that was an insurgency.
They were traitors.
Exactly. And so you appreciate this. You also understand what that weapon does. And we would every year go on out there, and we would shoot, and you would see this, and the guy was would say, okay, we just this one bullet here just cost this guy his heart, his lung. It looks like he broke three ribs, and he might have actually punctured his spleen as well. And that was one bullet. And you understand that police, they for the most part, they don't have where half their unit is taken out by an ambush. And so without the loss, without the constant reminder of what these things really do, then it becomes a freaking video game. And I don't think that they understand, they just don't understand the lethality and the seriousness of what they've got until they have a dead person on their hands.
Yeah, it's a good point. Mm. It's a really good point. And again, I think that there's psychology here that has to do with the body armor, that has to do with the uniform, that has to do with carrying the weapon. Again, the closest I can get to this, I was in South Sudan some years ago. In fact, there's a picture of it on my website over at tomhartman.com. And we were doing relief work. We were feeding people. We were flying food into Gok Machar, which is a little town about 15 miles from the border of Darfur. And just literally 15 miles away from us, people were being slaughtered and villages being burned. And I had three local guys, carrying AR Kalashnikovs, what is it, AR-45s or no, the AK-47s. Mm-hmm. Wherever I went. And again, there's like your head just works differently when you've got, when you're surrounded with guys with guns who are willing to point them at people around you. And I've had guns pointed at me also in situations like that. Actually, that was in Uganda back in 1980, and we did not have security. We were in the middle of civil war, and a woman who I worked with, her name was Anne. She was with the Irish Red Cross. She took a bullet to the head. I mean, I wasn't there when she got killed, but it was the day before. But she was killed by a sniper. And so being on the receiving end of it is a whole different experience, too. And it just, I think we don't think about those things when we discuss these issues. It's so easy to just kind of break it all down to, good cop, bad cop, who is and who isn't, and all this stuff. I think this is actually a fairly complex issue that involves the law, that involves psychology, and that involves liability.
And it also should be mentioned here, as you and I are talking about this, I mean, we have in Minneapolis plenty of cases of officers shooting African-American men. But in the case of George Floyd, that was a knee to the back of the neck for 9 minutes. And that's just a lack of understanding of what you're doing to another human being, the callousness, the lack of humanity and empathy. I think
he fully understood it, man.
You do. Minneapolis, they're talking about, you talked about how do you rein in the police unions. The city council is actually starting to mull around the idea of completely dissolving the police department and restarting over again. And it sounds like they actually have the legal ability. Is that the next step? Is that it's going to have to be the local municipalities to do this, because you'll never do it on a state level for most states?
I think so. And I think that that's going to be, I predict that over the next 5 years, you're going to see that as a growing trend in America to just basically reboot the system. In city after city after city. I don't know how else to do it.
I agree wholeheartedly. I don't know any other way. The system, that, like I said, there's that Yahoo News story about the Minneapolis Police Department. You read it and you're just like, okay, yeah, you can't fix this. And so I don't know any other way to do it outside of just tear it down and rebuild it again. So. Tom, once again, an absolute privilege to chat with you. Thank you for your insight on this. TomHartman.com, TomHartman.com, the Hidden History series, the Hidden History of the War on Voting, the Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America, and the Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment. You can find that at Next Chapter Books in St. Paul, as well as, I imagine, TomHartman.com. Tom, thank you much.
Thanks, Matt. Great talking with you.
You bet. It's Matt McNeil right here on AM 950.